Hello and welcome to Single Take with Daniel Barnes. I'm your host, the Daniel Barnes from the title, and not only am I the host of Single Take, but I do actually record these episodes in a single take, just like the opening shot from Bonfire of the Vanities, and you all love that. So really all I'm asking for is the same respect and admiration that you would afford to the film adaptation of the Bonfire of the Vanities, okay? I've also been referred to as the Devil's Candy many times, many times. So I don't see what the problem is here. This week on the Single Take podcast, I'm going to give you my single take, no more, no less. It's all I've got on the latest Pixar film, Hoppers. That's opening in theaters today, March 6, 2026. And we'll continue the Pixar theme with my review of In the Blink of an Eye. That's directed by Pixar veteran Andrew Stanton. He made cannon fodder cannon inductee Wall-E, don't you know? And In the Blink of an Eye premiered last week on Hulu. But first, I do want to clarify something from last week, from my review of Scream 7. I claimed in there, somewhat facetiously, but also, you know, wrongly, I'll admit, that Billy Loomis, that's the character played by Skeet Ulrich in the Scream series, and specifically in Scream, not Scream, but Scream, the 2022 film, and Scream 6. I claimed that he was a ghost. Of course, his character dies in the first film, comes back as what I called a ghost in the 5th and 6th entries. Now, I know Billy Loomis in the 5th and 6th Scream movies, not technically a ghost. I get that. Just everyone take it down a notch. I get he was some sort of a combination of a psychotic delusion and a genetic reality for Sam. That's the character played by Melissa Barrera in Scream. Not Scream, but Scream and Scream 6. He's part of her DNA. He's speaking from inside of her, but he's also outside of her as a hallucination and then just as an overall symbol of a dark legacy that she is assuming and sort of having to reckon with. Hope that clears it up. Billy Loomis in Scream, not Scream, but Scream and Scream 6, not a ghost. 100% categorically, I want to make this so very, very clear. Not a ghost. No. But, you know, broad strokes, time being a factor. When you think Billy Loomis in Scream, not Scream, but Scream and Scream 6, just think ghost. It's fine. So I hope that really does clear that up. But more importantly, what I really want to clarify is that it is not now, it never has been and never will be the intent or the purpose of this podcast to either prove or disprove the existence of ghosts. I'm not wading into that. No, thank you. Okay. That's not the official position of the Single Take podcast on the existence of ghosts. No position, no take at all. We're not on anyone's side. All right. We're not going to talk about ghosts. We're not going to think about ghosts. I will not be booking any ghosts on the show. And forget about busting ghosts, okay? Some people say busting makes them feel good. Not me. Not me, buddy. Busting makes me feel nothing. Total emptiness. Sometimes I will bust and I'll just sit there. Well, that's neither here nor there. The point is, moving forward, Single Take Podcast, never, ever, ever will we talk about ghosts. Now, speaking of ghosts and other horrifying things, the Academy Awards are next Sunday, March 15th. I'm not going to have a show next Friday, that's the 13th. I'll be back with Single Take on March 20th. So this is my last chance to talk to you before the Oscars. And I don't really have a take on the Oscars or any awards necessarily. I sort of take the Ron Swanson view of awards. They're stupid, they're pointless, and they're all about ego for people whose egos are already completely out of control, but they would be less stupid if the right awards went to the right people, okay? And I say that knowing that I'm a tiny, itty-bitty, little, mini, tiny cog in the award season machine as a member of one of the premier regional critics organizations, San Francisco Bay Area Film Critics Circle. I'm realistic. I know we don't have a ton of like wide-ranging influence necessarily, but critics awards in general, they sort of set the table for award season. You're kind of clearing out a lot of the flotsam and jetsam of award season and kind of bringing it back down to the real contenders. And that's, I think, what the critics awards kind of do for the life cycle of the award season. However, just don't get worked up about it. about who wins or who loses or who got snubbed or whatever. Like, don't put too much meaning about it. I remember something that my dad said when I was very young. This was a very helpfully cynical thing that my dad said. He was not the most cynical person. He's a very positive guy. I love you, Dad. But something he said when I was young, I can't remember it exactly, but basically what he was saying is that all of this, the whole show, the whole thing, the whole shebang, it's all just an advertisement. All just an advertisement for the movies themselves, but also for the movie industry, kind of in general, and the Academy specifically, okay? It's an advertisement. This is marketing here, okay? So they're not going to pick the best in the way you or I or any normal human being would pick the best, where we would think, that's my favorite, or that, you know, had an impact on me, or that changed this or that, or, you know, however you kind of define that. They're going to pick the films and the performances that they think make them look the best. Again, sales and marketing 101, okay? You don't put your rotten fruits up front on the fruit stand. You put up your big shiny apples and you let that be the symbol for all the rotten fruits that are hiding behind it, okay? Like, it's in the case of the Academy, what do they think makes them look the best is that they want to look smart but not too smart, you know, sensitive yet populist, socially conscious yet relevant to as many people as possible. And what that ultimately means is like a winnowing down to a middle ground that can be agreed on, not necessarily the best. So just think about that when you're watching the awards, like whether your team won battle after another, whether you're team Sinners, or God help us all, whether you're team Hamnet, don't overreact, okay? At the end of the day, you got to know this. It's trivia. Like, you got to know it for trivia nights. You got to know it for Jeopardy clues, but it's just trivia, and don't invest it with any more importance than that. Now, having said all that, if Golden from K-Pop Demon Hunters does not win the Best Original Song Oscar, we burn the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion to the ground. I don't think they're not being held there, but we burn the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion to the ground. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter, because nothing would make sense at that point. Do you want to live in that society? Neither do I. Honestly, that would be the one little thing that might just tip me. The last straw that gets me into anarchy. Like, I just really get deep into anarchy. So, your move, the Academy. I mean, ball's in your court. You got all the power here. So, do the right thing. And not like when you snub Do the Right Thing for Driving Miss Daisy, but actually do the right thing. You have 1 hour. It's a week from... You got a little more time than that. So, good.
Doc! Oh, I need your help! Mabel, I'm in the middle of class. A class that you are enrolled in.
Sup, Mabel?
Come with me. The traditional methods to understand animals just weren't working. But we've done it, Mabel. We created a revolutionary technology that gives us unprecedented access to the animal world. We call it hoppers.
Huh?
We put this into this.
Yes, yes. This into this.
Mabel!
Be careful!
Yes, the film I will be reviewing this week, it's Hoppers, IMDb synopsis of Hoppers. A 19-year-old animal lover uses technology that places her consciousness into a robotic beaver to uncover mysteries within the animal world beyond her imagination. Hoppers, you're getting a hot take here, another just sizzling hot take. I watched the 10:30 a.m. show this morning, that's Friday, March 6, 2026. And already it is just the hot take is, I mean, just be careful because you could really, really burn yourself. And I only have so much aloe. Hoppers. It's a Pixar film directed by Daniel Chung. He's new to Pixar. I looked for his credits. He created a show called Wee Baby Bears. No idea. I have honestly even no idea. It's animated. I don't know what's the tone. Who's the audience? I have no idea. No kids. No idea. But Pixar's not been as reliable as it used to be, I think, and it's this kind of whatever phase we're in now, phase 5 or 6 or 100. They're leaning a lot more these days on the sequels, and the originals have been a real mixed bag. I really disliked Elio from last year. At the same time, I did like Turning Red. I thought that had a kind of new sort of energy. More mixed on Elemental and Luca, but I think the kind of main point here, nothing's broken out in a while. I mean, Inside Out 2 is good. We got Toy Story 4, and now we got 5 coming out. But none of these new originals have really broken out of the pack. So the influx of some new talent with Daniel Chong, a little new energy, could be a good thing. That brings us to Hoppers, voice talent on Hoppers. Piper Curda is the lead as Mabel. We've also got Bobby Moynihan, John Hamm, Kathy Najimy, Dave Franco, and a few surprises. The story's about Mabel. That's Piper Curda. She's a passionate, maybe overly passionate, kind of Leslie Nope-ish animal lover. From a very young age, she's been passionate about animals and communicating with animals and sort of communing with nature. And as a teenager, she's become a team of one activist. She's an activist, but she's got no group. And we get a nice needle drop for Rebel Girl in this kind of introduction to her teenage self. She's, again, very passionate. She's very driven, but she's so strident and so quick to anger that no one's on her side, really, at all. She butts heads with the growth-obsessed mayor of her hometown of Beaverton. That's John Hamm. He's intent on building a pointless superhighway that will circumnavigate the city, but she wants to save the glade, this little kind of nature area that meant so much to her as a little girl when she visited with her grandmother. Now, as a teenager, she inadvertently discovers that her college professors have created a technology called hopping. They can be hoppers. And what this means is you put this into that. You transmit human consciousness into robotic creatures who live and can communicate with their animal counterparts. So you put a human brain into a beaver, the beaver goes out and hangs with beavers, and you can talk with beavers and hear what beavers are saying and all that kind of thing, and they think that the beavers all think that you're a beaver. But the point of this for the scientists was just to observe, and of course Mabel doesn't want to observe. She wants to get right in there. She wants to save the glade. So she impulsively hops into the body of a robotic beaver in this kind of crazy last-minute attempt to save the glade, but she gets deeper and deeper than anyone thought. She finds out that the animal kingdom is a lot more complex. It's driven by these sort of politics that no one ever really imagined. And although she makes friends along the way, including the gregarious Beaver King, that's voiced by Bobby Moynihan, he's really good, she also may accidentally start a war between animals and humans just because she... There's no brakes. She is all gas, no brakes, Mabel. I mean, she's a really great, flawed heroine for Pixar. I really, really liked Hoppers. Really, really liked it. I don't feel like it's getting a lot of juice or a lot of buzz, but this is a really good movie. After a number of middling, self-referencing, navel-gazing sort of entries from Pixar, Hoppers just has this energy. And it gets back to this just weird, kind of almost boundary-pushing fun, but also with a genuine heart, a human heart at its center. Got a lot of big laughs. It's got a nice message about doing the right thing, but also doing it in the right way. Because Mabel, for all of her pluck, all of her courage, she's a steamroller. She actually pushes people off of the issues that she's passionately arguing for and often does more harm than good along the way. So I also love the character design. All the animals, they look like these just adorable, cuddly, stuffed creatures. And there's just lots of like memorable characters along the way. Again, I go back to some of these Pixar movies of the last 5 or 6, about 10, 15 years. There's almost no memorable character. I can't even remember who are the other characters in Luca? Who was like the second in Lightyear? I can't even remember. They're very unmemorable, but these characters, extremely, extremely memorable. The usual third act issues, sure. Artificial raising of the stakes, yeah. Inexplicably pat resolution, okay. But it's a really good story, good characters. Like I said, it's fun, it's funny, and it's weird in that Pixar sort of way, okay? We're never going to be talking about this movie like we talk about Toy Story or like we talk about WALL-E. No one's putting this in any sort of canon, but this is some solid second-tier Pixar. And that's pretty good for where we're at right now in the movies or in Pixar or life or anything. So I say go see this movie. It's a big-time bump it.
It's just you and me, buddy. My research is kind of a big deal. We could find out where we come from. We could live longer.
Good morning, Coakley.
Good morning, Roscoe.
Are we there yet?
We reached a new planet in 26 years.
Won't that be nice, huh?
Why?
Our old home was dying, and now we're making a new home.
I guess it's just the nature of life, right?
Next up on the Single Take podcast, we've got In the Blink of an Eye. I'll read you the IMDb synopsis for the film. Three storylines spanning thousands of years intersect and reflect on hope, connection, and the circle of life. And that really, 100% accurate, finally, by the IMDb synopsis. But also, there's not really much more to say about this movie. That's it. There you go. It's directed by Andrew Stanton. We're continuing the Pixar theme. Of course, he's one of the old guard at Pixar. He's one of their first 10 employees. He's currently vice president. And of course, we all know his great success in animation. WALL-E, Finding Nemo, Toy Story 4, upcoming Toy Story 5 later this year. However, his foray into live-action films has been a little more checkered. His first film was the mega-bomb John Carter, which is not that bad, but also not that good. It's just, I don't see it as a film that's ever going to be like fully resurrected. And people just, I've been wrong before, you know what I mean? But I don't see like a Heaven's Gate sorcerer kind of resurrection in its future. He never made another live action film. That was John Carter, like 2011, 2012, something like that. Stanton, he has directed episodes of a lot of really good TV shows, Better Call Saul, he did Stranger Things, Three Body Problem, a whole bunch more that you would know. But he has not made a second live-action feature film until now. So what does Stanton have for us in the Blink of an Eye, which premiered last week on Hulu, and I don't believe actually got a theatrical release? He's got for us a lot, and simultaneously, not very much. Outwardly, it's bold, it's ambitious, it's far-reaching, but inside, really, it's pretty meek, pretty tepid, this interwoven trio of stories spanning millennia and touching on life, death, and capital letters, what it all means. You get here a little bit of Malick, you get a little bit of The Fountain, you get a little bit of Interstellar 2001, a little bit of a lot of existential sci-fi films in that sort of mold, but then also a generous dollop of that terrible Robin Williams movie, Being Human, for just that perfect pop of pap. It premiered last January at Sundance, again, now streaming on Hulu, and it's telling these three different stories set in three different eras, but are they that different? Oh, because of life. They all sort of flow together thematically and in the narrative too. It's not like one at a time. They're kind of jumping back and forth. This first story is set in caveman times. You have another story that's set in present day, and then you have another story set hundreds, maybe thousands, I can't remember the exact date, but way, way in the future in outer space. So what's connecting stories from caveman times, modern times, and outer space times, they're all focused on people who are actually dealing with the cold reality of death, but also trying to sort of live on beyond that, thinking of ways that they can live on, that something else can live on, whether that means having children, sort of living forever that way, whether that means making like lasting connections or doing world-changing work that no one will ever forget. So in the prehistoric society, death is everywhere. Avoiding death is a minute-to-minute struggle. You sprain your ankle, you're done. In the contemporary story, Rashida Jones plays a researcher who's studying the bones of the same caveman that we met in the earlier story. So she's also just immersed in the past, immersed in death, and doing that at the expense of her present relationships, including with a professor played by Davi Diggs. She's also dealing with the impending death of her mother, so she's just stuck with the past death, present death. She's kind of right in the middle of it. And in the future story, Kate McKinnon plays an extended life astronaut on a centuries-long mission to repopulate the human species in a new solar system. The stories jump around a lot, jump back and forth here, there, everywhere. But it all ties in well. It's not confusing. Stanton's skills as a storyteller, they're still quite evident. However, the underlying meaning of it all, it's all just a bit muddled to me. And I think the whole movie just feels like a muddle, a little bit of a mushy muddle. I think the middle story with Rashida Jones and Daveed Diggs is where the movie really goes wrong. Like, this should be our anchor. This should be the thing that we really kind of pulls us in and has like human feeling to it. There's very little substance to it. It felt to me like highlights from a TV series that I would never watch. Not a million years ago, not today, and not in the future. I would never watch that show. It's just another glib show about a bickering couple. None of the characters really felt like more than a sketch, and I didn't connect with any of the performances either. Except maybe the caveman, but I mean, part of that is that they're cavemen and women, so they don't get saddled by the screenplay with all of these long-winded speeches about what it all means and who we are and how this happened. So I don't want to spoil all the twists of it because, you know, it is kind of, the enjoyment of the film comes from kind of piecing together how this is all going to fit together and sort of seeing how the screenplay and how Stanton as a storyteller, they kind of, you know, tie it all in together. But as far as the overall effect of it, again, to me, it's a mushy, middling muddle, okay? And no real meaning came out of it for me. So I'm going to say dump it for In the Blink of an Eye. It's a soft dump, but, you know, sometimes those are the worst. It is now streaming on Hulu and Disney Plus. I'm going to say dump it for In the Blink of an Eye, but it's a big-time bump it for Pixar's Hoppers, playing everywhere right now. Go see it. Go see it. It's really, really good. I'll also say, I don't think it's playing too much anymore, but I did this week get to check out Elvis Presley in concert, Baz Luhrmann's sort of documentary slash concert film slash, I don't know, greatest hits of Elvis and his time at Las Vegas, and it's a heck of a movie. Gosh darn, was that a fun, fun film. That and Hoppers are my two favorite films of the year thus far. And speaking of the Oscars, as we were at the opening of the show, Best International Film nominee, Surratt, opens at the Tower Theater. I think it's this week, the 6th. If not, it's the 13th. Either way, it was one of my top 10 films of the year. I know it's going to be a divisive film. I used to work at the Tower, and this is a movie that I'm like, yeah, walkouts. There's going to be a bunch of walkouts in this one. But there's also going to be people like me who are just mesmerized by this movie. So Surratt. Everyone's talking about Surratt. And that's all I have for you on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes, recapping again, bump it for Hoppers, dump it for In the Blink of an Eye, and bump it for Surratt and Elvis Presley in concert while we're at it. I'll be back in 2 weeks on March 20. Enjoy the Oscars. We'll get back together then. Hey, are you a fan of classic and foreign films? You might want to check out the Cannon Fodder podcast, C-A-N-O-N. It's a play on words. It's a homophone. This podcast is a safe space for homophones. I want to make that very clear. I co-host the Cannon Fodder podcast with the great Corky McDonald. Our review of Sally Potter's Orlando with magical creature Tilda Swinton went live earlier this week. We release new episodes every other Tuesday, and two Tuesdays from now, we're going to review the great British romance Brief Encounter, directed by David Lean. And we've recorded a few more beyond that, and I'll tell you that we got some really good movies coming up. So get into the Cannon Fodder podcast. If you want to support that show, you want to support this show, do you want to support just me in general? Well, I tried to make it easy for you. All you got to do, you go to daredaniel.com, find the support the show in the menu. Support the show. There's also a donate button on the homepage there. The support of our donors is so essential, and as always, it's very much appreciated. Until next time, I'm Daniel Barnes saying, save me a seat in the back row.